Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm well. How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty well. Probably not as well as you. I just came back from a vacation out on Long Island, and you just got back from Paris.
Yeah, I did come back from Paris. I bet it was better than Long Island.
Long Island was a lot of fun, don't get me wrong.
No Eiffel Tower there.
No Eiffel Tower.
No Michelin three-star restaurants on Long Island.
Anyway, while I was out on Long Island, we'll talk about your Paris trip later, but while I was out on Long Island, I went to visit Shin Vineyards. Our friends David Page and Barbara Shin own a great winery out on Long Island that's making some really terrific wines. Better and better all the time, truly. I was out there with my family, and I said, you know, David, I'm looking for something to do this afternoon with the kids. He said, oh, Wickham's Farm is right down the street here. It's a peach orchard, and they have you pick peaches, and you can go and pick your own peaches and go to their little country store when you're done. Oh, what a great idea. Kids and I went in. I was with my aunt and uncle. We went. We picked a couple of bushels of peaches right off the tree. You know, mm-hmm. just really, it's a very fun thing to do with the kids. And so I got back to the little country store, and they were selling peach pies.
Mm-hmm.
Bought a peach pie, brought it home, had it with the family. It was delicious.
You should do that here in Jersey.
Everybody enjoyed. We should do that here in Jersey. And for a long time, we did do that here in Jersey. I was recently at a local farmer, and I don't want to give the name. Since I've been back. And while I was there, the health inspector stopped by while I was at the farm. And the health inspector was inspecting not for anything at the farm other than whether or not this particular farm was selling pies.
Why?
Because we are now enforcing some ordinance that pies must be sold out of a commercial kitchen.
So in other words, your local farmer who has a peach farm can no longer sell you peach pies.
So he can no longer sell you peach pies. So no longer can a little roadside farm sell you peach pies. I did go to a farm around the corner, and he was selling pies. There's a bigger farmer with another roadside stand.
Yeah.
And I said, so I went to the farmer, and I said, so how are you selling pies? You know, I hear that inspectors are coming down on people selling pies. And what he said to me was, oh, yeah, well, we have a commercial kitchen. We contract out for our pies. He comes and just brings us pies.
So they aren't his peaches.
So he's growing peaches in the backyard.
But using processed commercial peach pies.
And he's selling processed commercial peach pies because that's all he can legally sell.
Because the government does not work for the small farmer. It works against the small farmer, and it works for big corporate agribusiness.
What I really don't understand about this...
People haven't gotten sick from pies at all. In the history of my life, I can't remember a single person getting sick from a pie in a road stand.
Because
Jack in the Box, yes.
Because
peach pie, no.
Because even if there was a problem with a peach pie that somebody sold you at a roadside stand, it would make six people sick.
Right.
Okay, if there's a problem at one of these, all these foodborne illnesses you hear at all these large factories, you're going to make 10,000 people sick or 5,000 people sick.
Right.
I don't understand that. The next thing they're going to take away is the lemonade stand. My kid's not going to be able to sell lemonade by the curb.
Got to have a commercial kit. Got to use country time and filtered water.
Exactly. No lemons. All You're not allowed to do lemons.
One of the things I want to talk about is just the opposite of that, where the government doesn't regulate big business enough.
Mm-hmm.
Check this out. This is from the New York Times on September 5th. Doctor links a man's illness to a microwave popcorn habit. A fondness for microwave buttered popcorn may have led 53-year-old Colorado man to develop a serious lung condition that has until now been found only in people working in popcorn plants.
So there's a disease that only people who work in popcorn plants get.
Think there's any connection? I wonder. Okay, it's never found except in people who work in popcorn plants. It's called popcorn lung. And it's really serious. It doesn't affect your ability to breathe in at all. However, it seriously limits your ability to breathe out.
Which seems like a problem if you get, you gotta, you know, you need to do both of those things almost every single time.
Now, we're laughing at this because it's ridiculous. It's a disease that has been found only in people working in popcorn plants. It's tied to the artificial butter flavor. Well, now, the Pop Weaver, one of the large microwave popcorn producers, has already taken the ingredient in the artificial butter flavor out of its popcorn bags because of consumer concerns. That's a quote, and not because the company believes the chemical is unsafe for consumers. It has made people sick in a way that only happens in popcorn plants. Exposure to synthetic butter in food production and flavoring plants has been linked to hundreds of cases of workers whose lungs have been damaged or destroyed. Now, the chemical is found naturally in small amounts in milk and cheese and butter, but when it's isolated and heated into a vapor,
right,
and you breathe it in,
the problem is you're not really supposed to breathe in butter.
Yeah.
Hardly ever.
Now, there was coal miner's lung, but I put this to you there, that we should, number one, have taken better care of our coal miners in the past than we do now. And number two, the nation needed coal more than it needs
microwave popcorn.
Just put butter on the damn thing. Okay, so this guy goes to the doctor. He has this weird condition, and the doctor says to him, this is an odd question, but are you around a lot of popcorn? This is a consumer now. His jaw dropped, and he said, how could you possibly know that about me? I'm Mr. Popcorn. I love popcorn. He'd eaten microwave popcorn at least twice a day for more than 10 years. When he broke open the bags, and here's the thing to warn your kids away from, when he broke open the bags after the steam came out, he would often inhale the fragrance because he liked it so much. Okay. And then he got this terrible disease. Now, Dr. Rose, the doctor he went to, measured the levels of this chemical in the man's home after he made popcorn and found the levels of the chemical in the man's house were similar to those in microwave popcorn plants where there have been hundreds of cases of this disease that exist nowhere else. I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Perhaps there's a correlation. Perhaps.
Okay, the doctor tells him no more popcorn in the house, no more artificially buttered flavored popcorn in the house. 6 months later, the man has lost 50 pounds and his lung function has not only stopped deteriorating, but has actually improved slightly. This is not a definitive causal link. But it raises a lot of questions.
Are you having trouble exhaling, Francis?
Oh, my God. You know, it was Upton Sinclair. You know the guy who wrote The Jungle?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Upton Sinclair, and he said, it's difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends upon him not understanding. And I think that pretty much applies here. So I don't know. I'm going to recommend, for both taste reasons and health reasons, that we stick with butter.
Well, actually, we have coming up in this show my favorite food scientist in the world, a man by the name of Dr. Stephen Witherly, and he's actually going to give us some other good reasons why we should have fresh popped popcorn instead of microwave popcorn for taste and satiation reasons.
I am finding as I get older that the more I am a glutton, not in quantity but in seeking out quality, the better it is for me. I don't want diet stuff. I don't want fake stuff. I don't want artificially flavored butter that causes lung disease. I just want stuff that tastes good, and it leads me down a pretty good road. When we come back, we're going to talk with Stephen Witherly, who's been on the show before, but he's published a book now called Why Humans Like Junk Food, which we'll tell you how to pick up. And it's a fascinating read at the very core of what we talk about. And we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Stephen Witherly. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, WCTC 1450. It's 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guests today returning is Dr. Stephen Witherly. He is a PhD in human nutrition with over 23 years of experience as a food scientist. His book, which is tremendous, I read it last night, Why Humans Like Junk Food, The Inside Story on Why You Like Your Favorite Foods, The Cuisine Secrets of Top Chefs, and How to Improve Your Own Cooking Without a Recipe.
Dr. Steve, welcome to the show.
Well, it's great to be back.
You have a book now. That's so great. We had nothing to sell for you before. It actually makes sense for you to come on this show. You might gain by it.
Well, I think so. You guys are becoming like the food experts in the country, and it's so honored to return and be back on your show. So it's yes, it's finally out, and it's available for purchase.
That's great. And you can find it on Amazon.com, and we'll link it from our website. Now, were you on the line during the last of our break where we talked about this artificial buttered flavor being linked to popcorn lung?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I listened to it. It was a pretty funny segment, and I do have a few comments on that, if you like.
We like.
I actually know how to make butter flavor because I work for a company that makes that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
And butter flavor is made to be very volatile. In other words, it gets into the air quickly because it makes people attractive to it. I mean, you want to run to butter flavor.
Right.
However, here's the downside. Butter flavor is both water-soluble and fat-soluble. So when you breathe in the fumes, you're actually dissolving your lung tissue.
Yeah, and that's
Excellent.
Not where it's supposed to go, right? That's supposed to go into your stomach?
Exactly. So at high concentrations, that gentleman was actually, I think he was huffing the popcorn and probably getting high in the popcorn aroma.
Wow.
I'm a big fan of, well, butter as opposed to butter flavor.
Now, if I had just used butter in my popcorn and fried up butter in a pan, it would smell of butter. Why would that not hurt me? Or does the oil stand to be hurt by that?
No, you can't be. Natural butter, the compounds in there are much lower. And when you heat butter, the concentration of, for example, diacetyl, which is in that artificial, is probably 10, 20 times higher than you have in butter. So you can't get sick on butter.
So, well,
you've never seen how much butter I eat, Steve.
Well, so there you go. We got once again make the case for real food, whole food, have full
Absolutely.
Butter. You know, but you talk about in your book popcorn and microwave popcorn. You know what's funny? My girlfriend, now fiance, by the way, I just got back from Paris where I got engaged. But when she first moved in, I don't have a microwave. I'm sort of a backward sort of fellow. I didn't have cable. I didn't have a TV. I didn't have a microwave. And so we went around looking. She went to the store and we got some microwave popcorn. And we brought it back to the house. And, well, I don't have a microwave.
So we put it in the oven.
No. So I went into my cabinets. I went into my cabinets and I had a Jiffy Pop thing that I had bought probably
18 years ago.
Probably sometime in the mid-90s.
Did it catch fire?
No, but it was, we made Jiffy Pop popcorn, and to me, the popped popcorn that was popped on the stove was so much better to me, tasting-wise,
right.
And to
right.
her, who had never had that, by the way.
Which I think is amazing. There is an entire generation of people who simply haven't had
non-regular
popped popcorn
as easy
as it is to make.
So why, and your book explained to me, why does my stovetop pop popcorn taste better than microwave popcorn?
There's two big reasons. First of all, when you microwave popcorn, as you pop it, you're actually staling it. So the kernels get stale at the microwaves and the final popcorn. So that's number one. Number two is microwaves are very poor at generating flavor compounds, whereas direct heat is. So you have these two negatives going against you. And, of course, Mark is correct. 90% of the people have never tasted real popcorn the old-fashioned way.
Unbelievable to me. I'm just amazed that as easy as popcorn is to make, because it may be one of the easiest things on the planet to make,
mm-hmm.
oil, popcorn, a pot.
Yes.
Well, you need a lid.
And heat.
Lid
and
very important.
You do need a lid for
quite,
your pot.
Quite
yes.
the mess if you don't have a lid. Now, what about air-popped popcorn?
Actually, air-popped is better tasting. And then air-pop it and put on some regular butter, and you got something that's great. You skip the coconut butter stuff.
We have in our restaurant, and I saw a recipe that you put in to combine all the magic ingredients to make like perfect popcorn, because that's it's a pretty fundamental food where you get a lot of different textures and tastes.
Right.
We serve at the bar a popcorn at Catherine Lombardi, just as a little bar snack food, and it's popcorn popped in a pot with olive oil, Parmesan cheese, salt, and fresh herbs. You have the ideal popcorn recipe in your book, and it's pretty much that.
It's almost the identical
recipe.
Love
you, Steve, and we only read the book last night. Why is that the ideal popcorn recipe?
First of all, you made popcorn the correct way. You didn't stale it. And number two, you added a number of ingredients to it that are taste active. And if you serve it fresh and it doesn't get cold, then you've got all these things going on, the dynamic contrast. You got a little fat in there. You've got salt, Parmesan cheese, it's natural MSG. So you guys get it because you're clever and smart, but not everybody gets it, and that's why I put that recipe in the book.
Now, talk to me about flavor activators, because there are not all flavors are created equal. Some things that like salt and MSG that you put into MSG, which is not bad for you, by the way, necessarily, they activate other flavors. How does that work?
Well, that's only becoming understood recently, but the thing about MSG is you don't need very much, and there's another compound called the 5' nucleotides. Those compounds activate the mouth so that you appreciate the flavors of food more. And as you noted in the book, the ideal ratio of salt to MSG is about 10 to 1. You just need a pinch of MSG or the 5' nucleotides, which are found in mushrooms and some other foods. And what they do is they increase the amount of food pleasure because your body is told, these things are good for you, eat them. So it's physiologically correct, those things.
One final thing I want to talk to you about that I think is very interesting is, you talk a lot about, and we're going to have to take a break and come back and flesh this out, things like hot peppers, black pepper, things that activate the pain centers in the brain can actually enhance the appreciation of other flavors. How does that work?
I'm glad you mentioned that because until recently it was unknown why we even spice food at all. But there are pleasure centers in the brain. There are just two of them. One of them is called the opioid receptor system, and the other one is called the marijuana receptor system. And those spices activate both. So they make food more pleasurable, even though, it just makes
the appreciation of other flavors. How does that work?
I'm glad you mentioned that because until recently it was unknown why we even spice food at all. But there are pleasure centers in the brain. There are just two of them. One of them is called the opioid receptor system, and the other one is called the marijuana receptor system. And those spices activate both. So they make food more pleasurable, even though, it just makes food taste better because of the activation of receptors in the mouth.
Amazing. We'll be back in just a moment talking more with Dr. Stephen Witherly about his book, Why Humans Like Junk Food, for WCTC, for it's 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Kathleen showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. You see, Kathleen Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or KatherineLombardi.com.
Hi, this is Ralph Saviano. Remember when the best restaurant you could name was in New York City? Well, not anymore. That's all changed. In fact, the best restaurant I know is right here in our own backyard in New Brunswick. That restaurant? Well, it's Stage Left. And New Jersey Magazine, among others like the Star Ledger, agrees. New Jersey Magazine calls Stage Left the best restaurant in Central Jersey. And if you look at the criteria they use, like me, you would conclude that it was the best in New Jersey, and deservedly so. The cuisine is exquisite, the wine cellar is second to none, and I mean anywhere, and the service is professional and thorough. All in all, a great dining experience. As an added attraction, Stage Left is also available for private parties, and remember to ask about their fabulous wine dinners. For what I think is the best dining anywhere, call Stage Left at 732-828-4444. That's 828-4444.
Central Jersey, 1450. Middays with Maggie Glynn. Weekdays at noon.
We've gone underground. The Sterling Hill Mining Museum. Up in the air. With discussions about our bridge infrastructure. And around in circles with our disagreements about politics. But mainly we've shared good discussions. On this show, your input counts.
Middays with Maggie Glynn. Weekdays at noon on Central Jersey Talk Radio. 1450 WCTC, Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's Mark and Francis. We're talking with Dr. Stephen Witherly about his book, Why Humans Like Junk Food.
Dr. Steve, one of the things that I enjoyed about the book, first of all, is there are lots of principles that we in the restaurant business abide by constantly because
right.
we just know that they're correct. We know what,
right.
what people like. And this kind of puts a terminology to it and kind of puts a framework around it. So for those of you in the business, I think that it's a great resource that way so you can kind of learn some of the things that you need to be doing.
There's an old quote about, you know, what did the professional chef say to the home cook? And the answer is salt, stupid. Why is salt so important to us?
Well, that's an excellent question, and that's the number one biggest mistake that the home cook doesn't use enough salt. The reason is that human beings are unique in that we have the inability to store salt in the body. In a week, if we don't have any salt at all, I mean, basically, you drop dead. The bloodstream is 1% sodium chloride by weight, and guess what the preferred amount of salt in soup is? It's the exact same concentration as the bloodstream.
Wow. You know what's funny? And I don't know what the relation is interest-wise, but when we talk about something that's particularly salty, like we have the water that we make our mozzarella in, or there are a number of different things that should be a salty component. And
right.
We often say that the limit of when something that's salty gets too salty is, we say when something should be salty, it should be salty like the ocean. It should
right.
taste like the ocean. Is that related to that similar level of salt? That's
yes,
a higher
yes,
level.
Yes, that is. And I studied that, and then I realized that on many foods, when I looked at a lot of junk foods, they're actually pretty salty. And then I realized that when you eat a food, saliva actually dilutes it down. And when you eat a food and dilutes it down in the mouth, it dilutes it down to about the same 1% level. So a little saltier, it can be better, and that's the way we're made.
Is there a limit to that? Is there a point at which we say, oh, that doesn't taste good, it's too salty?
Yes, there is, and that point comes pretty quickly. For sugar, you can never add enough sugar. For salt, you can get too much, but everybody's just about the same on this respect, and you'll know it's too salty when you taste it.
You know, one of the things that I found very interesting is we whenever we do something sweet, we always add a touch of salt. Like we put up a lot of fruit this summer in
right.
sweet liquor, and we always add a touch of salt. And whenever we do anything salty, we add a little bit of sugar. That's something you cover in your book. In 30 seconds, why does that work?
There you go. Your entire life. Now you have 18.
Okay. Well, the reason is there apparently is a synergy between the two. The body loves salt and sugar, both sweet and savory systems, and it prefers actually to have them at the same time. And I found in my research that they both stimulate each other's receptors, and they both activate other receptors in the mouth at the same time. So a little sugar never hurt any dish, and the same thing with salt. If you make a sweet dish, you have to have a salt.
When we come back after the news, we're going to give away a copy of Dr. Witherly's book, so come back and stick with us. We'll be back in just a moment. WCTC 1450, time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Dr. Stephen Witherly has a PhD in human nutrition and over 23 years' experience as a food scientist. He is one of the most interesting people who thinks outside the box in ways that you to explain things that we think we understand and to point out things that we definitely don't understand. His book is called Why Humans Like Junk Food, The Inside Story on Why You Like Your Favorite Food, The Cuisine Secrets of Top Chefs, and How to Improve Your Own Cooking Without a Recipe. Now, we're going to do a little giveaway here. We don't do this a lot on the Restaurant Guys Radio, but to the ninth caller, if you want a copy of this book, at 732-545-9282, or if you're listening on the web, 888-545-9282, to the ninth caller, and to the ninth person who emails Francis at restaurantguysradio.com, that's Francis at restaurantguysradio.com, we're going to give you a book, a copy of Dr. Witherly's book, Why Humans Like Junk Food. So check it out.
And the reason we made it the ninth caller is our engineer, Tom Artuso, complains that he never has enough to do on our show. So
I will tell you, this is one of our favorite books on food, and if you don't get one for free, go to Amazon.com and pick it up. Really, really awesome stuff. Okay, I want to talk to you about a cultural phenomenon that's interesting. I read a book recently about the Roman Empire, and the Romans sort of made it as far as the Rhine, right? And then that's where they hit the German tribes, the Germanic tribes, and they weren't able to cross over. And that's often been referred to as the butter line, because below where the Romans had great influence, olive oil became dominant in cuisine. And above that line, butter was dominant in cuisine. Those two things seem to be interchangeable and play some of the same roles, yet they're very different. What do they have in common? Why are they different? Why do some cultures use one and other cultures use another?
Well, that's a very good question. Of course, you have to have access to olives to have olive oil. But the butter phenomenon is related to dairy and cattle. And so if you have access to butter, you have access to meat, and you have access to milk. And milk means calcium. So the Germanic tribes had a tendency to be bigger and bulkier and probably tougher because they ate a lot of meat. And humans are meat eaters. And remember, the Romans are basically grain eaters. They were probably about 6 inches shorter than the Germanic tribes, and that's probably related to what's going on.
Interesting. Now, does olive oil play a similar role when you can't get butter? What does olive oil satisfy flavor-wise?
Well, that's a very interesting question. Olive oil is not simply just an oil. There are a number of polyphenol compounds in there. And it's funny you mention that. The better olive oil has more polyphenol compounds. And there is those polyphenol compounds are actually antioxidants and actually good for the body. And there is a scientist named Goff who says that if we smell something that smells good for us, it's good for the body, and we like it. It's called nutritional conditioning. And olive oil has a lot of good stuff in there.
Now, one of the things that I found interesting in your book is how foods affect other foods. We talked about how salt and MSG affect other foods.
Right.
But there's sort of an order in which we consume foods. You talk about why we don't have dessert first. Have dessert last? Why does the sweet come at the end?
The reason is the body's major job is to maximize calories. And if we eat dessert first, all that the sugar and all that fat and all that emulsion kills the appetite. But after you've had a savory course first, your stomach's kind of full, and the dessert doesn't directly attack your stomach receptors. So you can enjoy the sweet course without feeling too full, and, of course, that's the way it works. In all cultures, it seems it's savory first and sweet later.
Wow, that's really fascinating.
It is really interesting. You know, one of the things I loved about the book is how you talk about the interplay of certain foods with other foods and why we like certain things with certain foods and why we necessarily dislike certain foods.
Right.
One of the maxims of the wine business and restaurant business is artichokes, and talking about artichokes with certain wine is death to the restaurateur.
Right.
Artichokes destroy the flavors of a lot of wines. Why is that?
Well, I know you guys are wine experts. The reason is there is a compound in artichokes called chlorogenic acid, and that makes water taste sweet. So if it makes water taste sweet and you pair it with a wine that's mostly water, if you don't get the right wine, it completely destroys the character and throws you off, and all of a sudden you go, what's with this wine? It doesn't taste right. So artichoke is a scary business and should be treated with great respect.
We do.
Now, the other thing you talk about the texture of food. You say dry food is sensory death.
Oh, that's one of my great maxims. That's correct.
Why is dry food sensory death? And if dry food is sensory death, why do some people order their steaks well done while other people order them nice and juicy and mid-rare?
Okay, well, let's get to that real quickly. In my research, I found out that your salivation rate to food, it depends almost exactly on how much pleasure is in there. And if you have dry food in your mouth, you can't, the salivary glands, the taste buds don't interact. So taste is pleasure, and if you have no moisture in the mouth, you can't activate any taste buds. So dry food then isn't very tasty. Why do people like well-done food? In my research, I found out it's almost a cultural thing. They think pink means you're going to die if you eat it.
Interesting.
And they want to get the red blood out of there because red blood means something bad in their past or their family or the way they were raised. I know that a lot of the Oriental culture, if they see red in meat, they won't eat it.
How much of what we taste is cultural, and how much of what we taste is hardwired into us?
Gosh, that's a very difficult question. But let me say this, that the taste for salt, sugar, MSG, and 5' nucleotides is completely built in. Culture allows exposure to the food, but a lot of it is built in. We know intrinsically what is good for us, and we'll go after it. And culture plays a role, of course, in exposure. But it's basically built in.
So let's say we haven't been exposed to a food, okay? And all of a sudden we begin being exposed to this new food that's relatively tasty, but we've never had exposure to it. How do we know that food is going to be enjoyable? How does our body know?
That's an excellent question, and that's called food neophobia. The way we do it is In animals, a rat will nibble food and come back to it in 6 hours, make sure it doesn't die. Humans have that same kind of response. They nibble it and come back again. But you will learn to like a food if you're hungry and if it has calories and it interacts with your stomach. One bite that goes to your stomach that has calories, it'll convert your liking overnight.
Now, what's going wrong, Stephen, with it seems as though if we're so hardwired to find what's healthy and good for us, why are we getting fat, diabetes, glaucoma, blindness, all? Why are we going a heck in a handbasket? If our body is designed to find what's good for us, we seem to be eating what's bad for us. What's going on?
That's an excellent question, and at the core of the obesity epidemic, which is 64% of America. And the answer to that is 10, 20, 100,000 years ago, salt, fat, sugar, and emulsions were rare. Caloric density was low. Nowadays, it's everywhere. And if you have food that is tasty and has all these compounds and it's everywhere you look, it's just, you can't resist.
Well, I mean...
And so we're not built to have these kinds of foods every single meal, all the time, in as much quantity as we want.
Probably not. However, we do have genes, which I call meat and fat eating genes, that actually can handle the junk food surprisingly well. If you gave junk food to our closest cousins, say, for example, chimpanzees or apes, they would be dead in 3 years.
Really? Why?
Yeah.
How they just eat it until they die?
No, heart disease.
Huh.
They would have hardening of their arteries, and they would be dead.
But yet other animals are addicted to these. We had an author on, Kurt Wenzel, recently, who talked to us about...
Lions in L.A.
Lions in L.A. and how addicted they are becoming to fast food.
They're raiding the fast food dumpsters.
Well, yeah. Well, lions are strict carnivores, and they can probably find meat and fat in those dumpsters. And
right.
That's probably... Now, lions do not have sweet receptors in their mouth at all, but it's the fat and the leftover meat that they're going after.
But they're becoming addicted to fast food, and they're more addicted even than human beings are to that type of food.
Well, it's probably because it's digested really quickly, and raw meat doesn't digest as quickly as already cooked stuff.
Hey, listen, when we come back, we're going to talk more with Dr. Stephen Witherley, and we're going to talk with him about some things that you can do at home and some magic tricks that all the great chefs use to make their food great. The winner of the book here on broadcast radio is Carol from Kendall Park, who won the book. We'll be sending that out to her. And as soon as I check my email, we'll know who won from that. We'll tell you next time. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Stephen Witherley, WCTC 1450. It's 11:45.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room, and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Joining us today is Dr. Stephen Witherley talking about his book, which you can pick up at Amazon.com, Why Humans Like Junk Food. You can also link to it at our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Dr. Witherley, there's something that I didn't find the answer to in your book and has really fascinated me. We were quoted, Sharon Ginsler of the Star Ledger, which is the largest circulation daily paper in Jersey, recently did an article on cooking with alcohol, which is something that we do. I put up fruits in alcohol. We use a lot of wine in cooking. What role does alcohol play in wine and in flavors? And I'd like to talk talking about how we use red wine in a lot of stuff, and it doesn't make the food taste winey like in a sauce or in a base or in a stock, or I braise a rabbit in red wine and vegetables. And if the red wine's missing, the dish is just not there. What does red wine do?
Well, I can explain that one because I use a lot of red wine in cooking. First of all, red wine has alcohol in it. Alcohol if you use it in cooking, acts as an extractant. So you can actually extract out the essential oils and the flavorings of whatever you cook. For example, bay leaf, if you simmer it in red wine, those compounds of bay leaf will come out. If you simmer it in water, they do not come out. So there's a little trick there. That, so that alcohol acts as a solvent, which is fantastic in cooking. And number two, number three, alcohol excites receptors in the mouth. There's actually receptors that only fire to alcohol taste, and so that adds additional pleasure. And number three,
it's been
red
shown
wine
that Irish people have 20% more of those. I'm sorry. I'm Irish. It's the only ethnic group I can make fun of. Anyway, go ahead.
We might get a few phone calls on that one.
I know. But probably my cousins.
But number three, red wine has about 500 volatile compounds in there that are not found in, for example, in a white wine. And so and number four, there's tannins in red wine that are not found typically in white wines, and tannins add mouthfeel. So it's four good reasons to cook with red wine.
You know, good.
So there are all these terms out there, okay? You know, carnivore, we all know, is meat eater.
Right.
Omnivore eats everything.
Right.
We got these locavores. We try and eat locally. You've come up with a new vore, and it's called cookivore.
That's correct.
Can you tell us why we're cookivores?
Yes, that's a great theory by a Harvard physiologist. His hypothesis is that what made us human was cooking. And he traces it back to perhaps 1.5 million years ago, where we discovered fire and we discovered fermentation. And as we discovered those things, we were able to cook food, concentrate it, increase in caloric density, increase the flavors, increase digestion, and allowed us to evolve into humans. It's a fascinating theory by Richard Wrangham.
You know, so there are now, there's a raw food movement going on, people who never eat cooked food, and there's there are, of course, vegetarian and vegan movements. So is a raw food vegan missing out on anything? I've always suspected they are.
Well, they may not be missing out, but they're missing out on flavor, and they probably won't advance to the next stage of human evolution.
That's very much like asking, is somebody who's completely celibate missing out on anything?
I drank just water for the rest of their life.
I'm just joking, of course.
Yeah, of course. You don't want to get the hate mail either. I got your number. You know,
in food, you know, the one of the most important parts, I think, for the layperson who buys your book is the magic ingredients section.
Right.
It's so important, and some of these ingredients that we use in a restaurant business on an everyday basis, almost in an every meal basis.
Right.
You discuss in your book. You need to clue some of our listeners into that, and if my mother-in-law's listening, pay attention.
Yeah, real quickly, there's 10 super pleasure foods that if you use in your cooking in any way, just figure out a way to put it in there, it'll make it taste better. And sometimes I've gone to people's houses and these are all missing, but things like soy sauce, cheese, garlic, butter and cream, shallots, sugar's great, Worcestershire sauce, egg yolks, salt and spices, and tomato paste is another secret weapon. These things make anything taste better.
Can I tell you something? I have a funny story. Friend brought some food over. Made some homemade food. It was very nice, and they're sort of one of those under garlic, under salting people. And I said, "Oh, let's take this in the kitchen, and I'll serve it up." And I am not above sneaking in a little bit of salt and garlic into your food if you bring it to my house. And then like, "Isn't it good?" I'm like, "It's delicious. It's wonderful." And the other thing that I use, you talk about alcohol as a flavor component. One of the things that's very interesting that we do, I think it's interesting anyway, and we've started doing in the restaurant. We'll make them available, you know, toward the end of the year. We've got a lot of good press on them actually. We've been putting up fruits in the summertime. Now, we put up tomato sauce. We make our tomato sauce at Catherine Lombardi from local tomatoes all year round. We put it up when we cook. And we put up fruits as well. But when we put up the fruits, we put them up with sugar for sweetness, and we put them up in alcohol. So we have plums that are put up in Chambord. What they're put up in is probably 20% alcohol.
Wow.
So when you eat one of these things, it is alcoholic. It's like, I don't know if you're under 21, you should be having one.
You should. I know for a fact you should not be.
So, but that alcohol with that sweet fruit is unlike any other flavor. You say, along with the five basic foods, that there are receptors for alcohol. That the taste for alcohol is like sour, salt,
and
sweet.
Also, it's been shown that alcohol boosts the taste of sweetness. So that was a brilliant example you brought up. it boosts the taste of sweetness. That's been shown.
I wish I knew how brilliant I was. I do all this stuff by accident. You know?
I have to say, reading your book has really made me feel smart, Dr. Witherly. I really appreciate it.
Or just lucky.
As I've gone through it, I keep reading things that I'm doing by mistake.
Dr. Witherly's smart. You're just lucky. Now,
I appreciate that.
I want to announce to everybody that what we're going to do, we spoke with Dr. Witherly on the phone last night, and in the spring, we're going to have a dinner based on Dr. Witherly's book. So you got to go out and pick it up so you can be all read up for this dinner. And Dr. Witherly's going to come to New Brunswick, and either Stage Left or Catherine Lombardi, we're going to do multiple courses that demonstrate all the different principles about why you taste food the way you do. And so together...
And why you like certain foods.
And then we'll actually experience
it. So much fun.
Isn't that going to be great? Have you ever done anything like that before?
No, I haven't. That'd be the first.
All right. Well, this is terrific. So
we're going to put it all together. You know, when we come back, we're going to go to a short break in just a second. When we come back, I want to ask Dr. Witherly about a new food that I saw a television commercial about yesterday and how it is affected by his principles.
I just can't wait. WCTC, it's 1450. It's 1155. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis. We're talking today with Dr. Stephen Witherly about why humans like junk food.
So, Dr. Steve, I'm watching TV last night, and I'm glancing through the book, taking some notes as I went through it the second or third time, and in the background, I'm watching a little bit of football, and I see a commercial. Now, two of the things in your book are why we love pizza,
right,
and another one is the Oreo cookie effect, why we love Oreo cookies so much,
right,
and I see a commercial for an Oreo cookie pizza. And I think, oh my goodness gracious, this must be the perfect food. But to me, it actually sounded a little disgusting. Do you have any insight as to where that might be going?
Yeah, well, what we're seeing now, there's kind of a fusion going on where people are taking their favorite foods and are like mixing them together. I saw a Krispy Kreme hamburger the other day.
Oh, I'm not ready for a Krispy Kreme hamburger.
No, I'm not ready for that. For most people, it's probably disgusting, but there must be a small fraction of people who watch football that find this kind of thing delightful, and God bless them.
Why do certain things that taste good in isolation, when we combine them, what makes that, you know, if there's going to be good for us and our bodies sending
right.
us towards...
Krispy Kremes are good, sugar is good, hamburgers are good, why aren't they good together?
Why does the body say we can't?
That phenomenon is called neophobia, and it's a built-in mechanism in our brain to protect us from eating stuff that's not familiar. So if you eat something that's not familiar, your body's wary of being poisoned. So if you start mixing foods, your body goes, wait a minute, I haven't had this before, maybe I'll be poisoned. So you take a little nibble and you come back to it later. So it's a protective mechanism.
So basically, you're saying that chances are, if I had a Krispy Kreme hamburger, a bite of it today, a bite of it tomorrow, and I work myself up to it a week or two from now, I could wind up liking Krispy Kreme hamburgers?
That's correct. That's correct.
Scary stuff. Scarier than science fiction.
Can we have a moment of silence and pray that that doesn't happen? Hey, Dr. Steve, it's been great to have you on the show.
It's always great.
Fantastic.
We'll be doing a dinner with Dr. Stephen Witherly. You can find out more about it by emailing us. You watch our website. It's going to take us a while to figure it out because it's going to be an egghead foodie dinner. Man.
It'll be the best dinner ever created.
It's going to be spectacular.
Well, and the way it's going to work is we're going to serve the course based on the principles in one or two of the principles in Dr. Witherly's book, and then you're going to love it, and then Dr. Steve is going to explain to you why you love it.
Oh, what a great opportunity for people.
Tremendous. Hey, listen, go to the website and pick up the book, restaurantguysradio.com, and you can do your studying because there'll be a quiz after that.
Actually, the quiz is going to be, what did you like best?
Actually, it won't be. And actually, will you come on the show again next month and talk to us about many of the other things that we haven't
Absolutely.
Even gotten to?
Absolutely. I'm on as long as you'll have me.
That's great.
You're the best. Hey, everybody, I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, WCTC 1450. The time is 12 noon.